And we're back. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And I believe we're joined on the line by Rick Sterling. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, Phil.
Well, it's nice to talk to you. You're, of course, I should say, is Rick Sterling is with the Syria Solidarity Movement.org. And it's a great site. I recommend people go to it. You, of course, have been very diligent. We can find your writings in Counterpunch and elsewhere. You've been following very closely this war. And today, of course, in the past few days, the discussion has been about nothing but Aleppo, the fighting in Aleppo. And I want to just ask you, who is it, who's fighting whom in Aleppo?
Well, the big picture, the important context, which is seldom mentioned in the mainstream media, is Aleppo is, years ago, it was the largest city, population-wise, in Syria. It's the major industrial powerhouse of Syria. The situation since the conflict began in Aleppo in 2012, since then, Jabhat al-Nusra and other extremist organizations kind of systematically took over various neighborhoods. And back then in 2012, James Foley, the American journalist who was later beheaded, he wrote some interesting articles that didn't get much play, but they're quite fascinating to look at because he talked about how unpopular the so-called rebels were who were taking over different neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what's transpired since then is that most of the civilians departed the areas that got taken over by Al Qaeda and other opposition groups. So that right now you've got a city that's divided. So imagine Toronto that's pretty much divided and you've got 80 to 90% of the population in the government-controlled areas, and then you've got about 10% of the population in areas that are controlled by basically terrorist groups.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you've got in Aleppo right now. So the opposition-controlled, it's only about 10 or 15% of the city population are in the opposition-controlled area.
Yeah. Now, we have a context we also hear about called, I guess I can use the term a ceasefire, and in which the big players are involved, Russia, the United States, and others.
Right.
And they had agreed that there would be a ceasefire, but certain people, certain groups were not going to be in it. And it's my understanding that the people you just described, they can't.
That's absolutely correct. So the term they've used is cessation of hostilities, and that was only going to include the so-called moderate rebels, which the U.S. has always talked about. Mm-hmm. There is a certain amount of them, but the major players are Nusra, which is the official Al Qaeda branch in Syria, and then Ahrar al-Sham and ISIS and some others. They are not. They're explicitly not included in the cessation or ceasefire, and so the Syrian government would never agree to stopping the fight against them, and that's why there is a. Although there was some reduction in violence even within Aleppo, the terrorist groups attacked the Armenian section of the city. They used chemical weapons there. And then beginning about 8 or 9 days ago, they started bombing and launching propane tank mortars into the government-held areas. So you've had 10, 20, 25 people being killed every day for the last 7 to 10 days in the government-controlled areas,
mm-hmm.
by hundreds,
mm-hmm.
of, basically they take propane tanks and they fill them with explosives and they launch them from the rebel-held areas into the government-controlled areas of the city.
Yeah.
This, of course, has received almost no publicity.
That's the part I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah, exactly. So the media has been giving huge coverage to the attacks on Al-Quds Hospital, which they've been talking about, especially. Now, that's interesting. I've been looking into that, and I'm working on an article about it. Basically, and one of our members is a Syrian-Canadian, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Alberta. He's currently in Calgary. He's just gone back a few weeks ago from his home in Aleppo. Mm-hmm. And he had spent the previous 9 months in Aleppo looking after his aging parents. And then he got relief by one of his brothers, and so he just returned to Canada a few weeks ago. In any event, so you've got a situation where they've been under, well, basically the water and the electricity, they only have a few hours a day. And they've been, they're basically getting attacked consistently, and the Syrian government is trying to press the war and basically get rid of the terrorist groups.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine how it would feel in Toronto if half your city was occupied, basically in almost like ghost towns. And that's the way one person described it a couple of years ago. He described the opposition-held area of Aleppo as a ghost town. So almost all the civilians leave, and you basically have terrorists who are paid and supplied by Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and indirectly by, and sometimes directly by the U.S. and the U.K., and Canada gives support indirectly as well.
Yeah. Now, we find ourselves talking, certainly here, that you're quite right. It's all about a hospital that was hit, and and very few solid details are available, and much debate about it. And it seems to me quite a diversion from the fact that there's really no disagreement that they're talking about terrorists who are not going to be part of any peace agreement. And if they're not eventually defeated, you're not going to have any peace agreement.
You're not going to have any peace.
And I don't understand why the focus isn't on, well, who's arming and supplying? And I have to ask you this. I saw a report, and it came from, I think it might have been even Associated Press, saying that there are still fighters being brought in from Turkey that are arriving at this moment to join the fight. Is that accurate?
Yeah, they still have a passageway. The Syrian army is getting close to closing off that the travel route that terrorists have been able to use from Turkey. Of course, Turkey has been hugely active in supplying the terrorists in Syria from the get-go. But it's fascinating, all these reports about the so-called Al-Quds Hospital. It turns out, so I've been digging into this, well, you know, what's the verification of this? And what I've learned, actually, is that the Al-Quds Hospital, and now our friend, the Syrian-Canadian, he said nobody knew of this Al-Quds Hospital. So it turns out that this, what they call a hospital, actually didn't exist 5 years ago. So it's probably more accurately a clinic.
Yeah, I have to, I noticed in today's Globe, they have a phrase, an MSF-supported hospital.
See, exactly.
That starts it starts to wobble at that point. Is it their hospital or somebody else's hospital?
Right. Well, it's definitely not their hospital. And in fact, MSF had some of their people kidnapped by terrorists either 1 or 2 years ago, and since then they have not sent any of their MSF staff people into Syria. So they're basically relying on reports from people. They may send some medicines in with Syrians who are members of the opposition groups. They're not MSF people. So MSF is actually, they're doing a big disservice by not being more factual on this score. So, number one, it's not really a hospital in the normal sense of the word. It might be a clinic. Number two, in the very few photographs of the building, it's not marked as a hospital. Another point is that MSF they said back in February that they are not providing the coordinates of facilities they support to the Syrian and or Russian air mm-hmm. forces.
Mm-hmm.
So the question comes up, and then there's a lot of contradictions in the reporting. One report says 10 people were killed. Another report says 50 people were killed. If you look at the doctor who's being acclaimed, the pediatrician who was purportedly killed there, it's very hard to find solid information on this individual.
Mm-hmm.
In contrast, there is a very good report for a doctor from the government-held area who is basically has a piece denouncing the mainstream media, the Western media, for simply reporting about one side of the conflict and ignoring all of the suffering and the deaths that are being rained on them in the government-held parts of Aleppo. Now, this doctor, you can verify his identity. In fact, I was researching it, and I found that the U.S. Embassy in Syria had this doctor listed as one of the doctors they could recommend in Aleppo.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other people who are being put forward now or being promoted in this story, it's a little bit. There may be a real pediatrician there, but it's hard to get verification of that now.
Yeah. Well, so I just want to make sure I made that underline something. You said it along the line there that if they make a decision not to reveal their location, I don't know how you really expect anybody who's engaged in a life and death battle.
Yeah.
All they can say to you is, let me know where you are and I won't hit you. But really, otherwise, you better get out of the way.
Right. And the Syrian government they're accused of deliberately targeting hospitals, but they deny that.
Well, I don't know how they could deliberately target somebody who won't tell us where they are.
Exactly.
It's kind of hard to do that.
And that's a big part of the bias here in the mainstream reporting. Now, additionally, some of the reports say, now there was actually an interview with an MSF, Doctors Without Borders staff member, who said that he said that the attack on Al-Quds Hospital, which, as I say, was not a hospital, it didn't even exist 5 years ago, it started with two barrel bombs that were in front of the hospital, and then that was followed by another barrel bomb. Well, barrel bombs are dropped by helicopters. They can't be dropped by jet fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And yet other reports talk about a missile strike. They talk about airstrikes. One talks about the hospital being totally destroyed, but if you look at the photographs, the roof seems to be completely intact.
Well, this, it sounds like we have a rather undiligent media. There's nobody actually checking up. They seem to just run with a story. As soon as they hear it, they go with it.
They do. And on top of that, Phil, the amazing thing about Syria is the extent and the success of the propaganda in this area. Now, there's a group called the White Helmets
mm-hmm.
that a lot of people think, okay, these are these great volunteers who are basically civilians who are doing rescue work. Mm-hmm. It sounds really good. Until you dig into it and you find out, well, this group was actually created by the U.S. and the U.K. The initial people were trained by a British military contractor. And they actively call for for NATO U.S. intervention in Syria. So as you peel back the layers, it's basically a propaganda tool.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and the White Helmets logo, their website, their name was created by an outfit, a marketing company called the Syria Campaign.
Mm-hmm.
The Syria Campaign is the one who's put forward the story that ran in the Guardian yesterday from a doctor who was praising the doctor who was killed in Aleppo. I mean, literally, the mm-hmm. Syria Campaign, which is basically a propaganda publicity mm-hmm. agency, is posting these stories. Now, I can't say this 100%, but I'm very suspicious. I think the letter is probably a fabrication.
Mm-hmm.
It just as the story of the White Helmets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the way, the White Helmets had an embarrassing episode where their leader was going to go to the U.S. and they wouldn't have let him in because they said he was a terrorist, right, or associated with terrorists.
Exactly. That happened just in the last week where Raad Saleh, who is the leader, was basically not allowed to. He landed in Washington, D.C. airport from Europe, and they wouldn't let him enter the U.S., and they turned him around because they say he's got suspicious extremist links. And yet,
when he's visiting the U.S., I guess when he's over in Syria, Lebanon, or wherever, he's okay. And they give him, and they give him money.
But we don't want him here. Now, meanwhile, the U.S., the State Department spokesman acknowledged that the U.S. provided $23 million to the White Helmets in the last year.
Yeah.
So figure that.
Yeah. Boy, they do. They are sort of in a hurry with their stories. They leave an awful lot of junk behind. Some people are catching them up. Some of the funnier moments at press conferences recently have involved this kind of information.
Exactly. And there's one guy named Matt Lee who's an AP reporter who really fixed it to the guy, and they were digging on that, and he brought it out. And he actually had a great quote the other day. He said, is there some kind of genius, devious strategy going on here where you say one thing and then do the opposite? And that was to the U.S. State Department spokesman.
Very good question. By the way, we're speaking to Rick Sterling, and it's from Syria, solidaritymovement.org, an excellent site. I'm interested in also what U.S. intentions are, and you know, we have a peace process, but I get the impression, listening to John Kerry, that they're still finding it hard to accept that they might end up in a peace deal in which President Assad remains president and his government remains in place. And is it true that Hillary Clinton, at this point, one of your presidential candidates, is still advocating a no-fly zone? Isn't that a little bit of a out-of-date idea?
Well, she is clinging to it, and that's the worrisome. That's the worrisome thing. If she was to become president, she might actually follow through with that threat. Basically, take the U.S. into even more direct involvement there. Now, the situation is very troublesome. The U.S. does not want the Syrian government to prevail in the conflict. And in fact, the same, you know, U.S. State Department spokesman has said, well, they don't really like it when the Syrian government advances, like when they're taking control of areas of Aleppo.
Yeah, that's when these stories about hospitals start cropping up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've got basically, right now we've got a barrage of propaganda with some very sketchy stories that need a lot more fact-checking to determine what's real and what's fiction. And I really think it's incumbent on Doctors Without Borders and their Canadian president to be objective. Are they basically prolonging a war through their demonization of the Syrian government, and are they effectively supporting the war on Syria by outside powers who are supporting terrorists?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you call? I mean, how would Canada feel if it was invaded by hundreds of thousands of armed fanatics who are paid salaries to overthrow the government, attack hospitals, so on and so forth?
Yeah, we would not like that.
Yeah, no government.
All patriots would rally and fight them, of course. Hey, I'm going to just put this to you, and again, it's Rick Sterling. What I notice, and it's an opinion piece in today's Globe and Mail, the writer says, well, you know, it's very important. We have to prevail on the Security Council to enforce international and humanitarian law, etc. Well, there is a legal issue here, isn't there? I mean, the United States is not actually legally in Syria. So why don't organizations like MSF and I suppose Red Cross and others say, you know something, the sovereignty of that country, it is a UN member.
Yeah.
Russia is there, but they are also invited, which is quite legal because the United States has military bases all over the world because they were invited.
Mm-hmm.
But Russia and the United States are not actually under the same question because it's the United States. It's really not there legally.
They're not there legally, and the, all of the supplying of arms to the to whether it's Jabhat al-Nusra or ISIS or Ahrar al-Sham or any of the other myriad armed opposition groups, it's all in violation of international law. You know, that was established actually when in Nicaragua, when Nicaragua took the U.S. to the International Court of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the U.S. support of the Contras were basically a creation of the U.S. Nicaragua won that at the International Court of Justice. Now, the U.S. just thumbed their nose at it, and then later on you had the International Court of Justice being ignored and the creation of something else called the International Criminal Court, which doesn't even consider those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And Canada's a big player there, as you know, but...
Mm-hmm.
That was established that it's against international law, customary international law is the expression they use, to fund, finance, and basically create and organize and support a proxy army attacking another sovereign country. And that's exactly what you've got in Syria.
Yeah.
If Syrians want to change their government, that's for Syrians to do and to decide on. It's not for Turkey or Saudi Arabia or Israel or the U.S. or U.K. or France or Canada.
Yeah, it does strike me that that is sort of the most important issue to be underlined, because there is, I suppose, the rationale is this old humanitarian intervention, basically rhetoric. We're not talking about international law. We're just talking about rhetoric. That we have a right to save somebody. But here
right,
you
and
have
there's one fascinating
an army of
about
the Syrians this. Versus terrorists, and we're still arming people who are with the terrorists.
We are. And I mean, one question is whether MSF is supporting an Al-Qaeda hospital. Is it Al-Quds hospital or is it Al-Qaeda hospital?
Mm-hmm.
Is that hospital treating civilians or is it primarily treating Al-Qaeda fighters?
Yeah.
Because that's the area that it is. Even the U.S. Defense Department says Al-Qaeda controls the opposition parts of Aleppo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one other really fascinating part to this, Phil, I want to mention briefly. Going back, and you mentioned Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton, in her book, she pledges to train over 1,000 so-called activists, activist journalists, and other people in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is where we're getting a lot of our media reports from, so-called activists.
Yes.
Who have been trained, supplied with electronics gear, satellite phones, video cameras, and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they are basically, they get a salary from the U.S. State Department.
Yeah. I'm really glad you underlined that point. Governments all over the world are starting to notice this phenomenon of the NGO that traces back to their political enemies.
Right.
We've been speaking to Rick Sterling, who writes excellent material, Counterpunch and elsewhere. You find the writing. And it's SyriaSolidarityMovement.org. Rick, we really thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Right. Could I put a plug in for people
Please.
To check out Don't give the Nobel Peace Prize to the White Helmets. If people can do a search on White Helmets and Nobel Peace Prize, they'll see a good petition that one of my confreres with the Syria Solidarity Movement has created, and it's worth signing.
Okay, it's a petition. Don't support. Don't
give the Nobel Peace. I mean,
no
they
Nobel
actually,
Prize
the
for the
want to give
White
the
Helmet.
Nobel Peace Prize to the White Helmets, which is the as we described.
Good. I'm glad you did that. Thank you very much, Rick.
Okay. Thank you, Phil. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Taylor Report, CIT 89.5, and that's Rick hanging up. We now know he's gone, and we're going to be going ourselves. I want to thank Charlotte for all the work, and we'll see you next week.